morning. My name is Michael McCusker. The current political climate in the USA is one of incendiary reversion, of savage descent to public intolerance, ignorance, and avarice, which are generally present, but not always given the platform or power of recent years. Serious, almost morbid attention is paid to pathological pieties and redundant simplifications of far-right ideologues, racial supremacists, and religious zealots who act at the extreme edge of our anxieties and reduce the national dialogue to a medieval level while grossly manipulating the democratic process to ultimately destroy it. The revered ancestors who fought the American Revolution and wrote the Constitution knew very well that governments swallow the rights of their citizenry, and that the natural inclination of authority is to concentrate and perpetuate its power by any means. Stripped of its fictions and fanfare, all democracy really does is give ordinary people a few tools to use against perfidious misrule of public office by special interests. And if they are not used, we the people lose the rights and liberties we do possess to corrupt, callous, or stupid public officials. The recent presidential administration of Donald Trump was the most politically repressive and culturally reprehensible in the nation's short history, as it was also the most deceitful and dishonest that severely eroded much of the basic fiber of democracy. The snide deceit of Trump and the Republican Party in its relentless attempt to subvert democracy with the egregious claim that the 2020 election was stolen from them is a diabolical attempt at dictatorial insurrection towards single-party autocracy. Trump and his despotic GOP junta demand that their false-hearted treachery be warped into an alternate reality, quote unquote, a lunatic vision of his despicable messianic megalomania that he only is the self-imagined master of Yankee Doodle Land, which is a diabolic delusion determined to destroy democracy. Although the USA is in mental and political distress, it is not yet coming apart, but Trump may be. After all, he is facing a future of criminal indictment now that he has been removed from the White House. The persistent question that hovers over our own perilous national future, do the values of democracy paralyze us to its flagrant potential for electoral fraud and virtual collapse by a loathsome boll weevil and his iniquitous cabal, who are speciously unfit to represent or govern democracy? It seems nearly axiomatic that the most fraudulent and despicable among us demand power against the people. Sensible Americans are resisting their participatory democracy being dismantled by a cabal of white nationalist racists and the insidious corruption of the former president and his depraved stooges. Our tattered democracy might yet persevere as a result of Trump's unstable penchant for turmoil in consort with his unfettered dishonesty, which might very well be the catalyst for self-destruction of the Republican Party that has already dissolved into a corrupted demagoguery. As has been said, Trump and his mendacious congressional ideocrats are steamrolling toward a new disorder by denying he lost the presidency. Writing for the Guardian newspaper at the advent of Trump's preposterously depraved presidency 4 years ago, Ross Barkin rather succinctly summed up Trump as the avatar of America's worst pathologies. He wrote that grotesque capitalism begets the grossness of Trump, in which every person and thing has a price and ethics are negotiable, which, Barkin writes, is no real novelty to oligarchs who think they are beyond all laws and conventions. What is new, Barkin wrote, is that Trump as president has the power to blow up humanity. Not now, but he can blow up democracy with a little help from his vile friends in the GOP. Trump's truly despicable crime against democracy is his big lie, that his failure to be reelected is proof in itself that the election was fraudulent, which he publicly claimed consistently months before the election, and though he lost every court case proclaiming the presidency has been stolen from him, he persists in the lie, callously oblivious to the sanctitude of the peaceful transfer of power, bedrock to American democracy. The violent and deadly insurrection against the nation's capital on January 6th can be defined as his thwarted attempt to overthrow constitutionally democratic governance. Democracy, as a result, is itself at a cusp, propelled by a proto-Republican pretender who really is not a party member at all, but instead an usurper who has played dirtier tricks on Republicans than their dirtiest tricks. And upon a certain segment of dispossessed voters, he has continually forfeited, especially since his eviction from the White House. As P.T. Barnum always said, and whom Trump grossly resembles in body and spirit, and undoubtedly admires, there's a sucker born every minute. We are at the perilous crisis our founders were most concerned would eventually occur, that free elections would be dubiously overwhelmed with deceit and suppression. And this is being done under the hypocritical rubric of election integrity. This is the cusp of Orwellian Machiavellianism. It should not be much of a surprise that George Orwell's 1948 book, 1984, once more became a major bestseller after the election of Donald Trump. Orwell created a language, newspeak, which is essentially based on the premise that by removing certain defining words of old speak, the thoughts and philosophies underlying them also disappear. Orwell conceived the term doublethink, which he described in 1984. Doublethink means the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them. This process has to be conscious, or it would not be carried out with sufficient precision. But it also has to be unconscious, or it would bring with it a feeling of falsity and hence of guilt. And that was Orwell. An important point to doublethink is, as philosopher Eric Fromm wrote in an afterword to 1984, in a successful manipulation of the mind, the person is no longer saying the opposite of what he thinks, but thinks the opposite of what is true. In other words, Fromm wrote, the person feels free because there is no longer any awareness of the discrepancy between truth and falsehood. And that's Eric Fromm. And so 2 + 2 = 5. Slavery is freedom. Torture of unbelievers is an act of love and charity. January 6th, 2021 was, as a Republican congressperson publicly stated, a tourist visit to the nation's capital. And its clamor, destruction, and death were caused by left-wing Antifa and Black Lives Matter, the congressman double-spoke. Freedom and democracy somersault into their opposites, despotism and subjection. Yet the double-think mind believes the ideology is what it says it is, rather than the opposite playing out right in front of the true believers. America is always at war with itself. It is a battleground of dispute and disparity. Political equity and justice have not been easy achievements, but instead a civil war, bloody as well as blood-curdling, between those who would extend democracy and those who would abrogate or limit it. Democracy is a perpetual work in progress about its elemental fundamentals, always in threat of stagnation and suppression. In a sense, the 1950s, a period of political hysteria and repression, are being revisionated. The cultural dialogue is narrowed considerably. Complex social and political questions are reduced to an us or them snarl. The most clamorously ignorant and repressive demand their vengeful and venomous fables be legislated into political truth and rule. In the false claims of freedom and justice, both are sternly eroded. It is increasingly difficult to resist inversions that permeate even the pores. The first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, famously said, "It is true that you may fool all the people some of the time. You can even fool some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time." The current war on truth began at the very beginning of Trump's presidency, when it was declared that alternate facts were in official ascendancy, and it became a game of sorts to count Trump's daily lies, which by their hundreds of thousands were in a very real sense a conditioning process of truth erosion. The USA is indeed engaged in a furious Rorschach test of national veracity versus public mendacity, an eternal wrestling match. And that was something I wrote. And now, by Colbert King. Let's pause to mark Brown versus Board of Education and its lessons for our time. It is hard to imagine that the anniversary of the Supreme Court's ruling in Brown versus Board of Education could come and go without being duly noted in the halls of Washington, D.C., or the national press, but sadly, that is the case. The landmark school desegregation decision reached unanimously on May 17, 1954, is also a cornerstone in U.S. history. The Brown decision not only established that it was illegal to segregate public schools on the basis of race, it also overturned the 1896 Supreme Court decision in Plessy versus Ferguson, permitting segregation in public facilities across the board, so long as it could be maintained that the facilities for whites and blacks were somehow equal. The Brown decision destroyed Plessy's separate but equal doctrine. The court plainly declared, "Separate educational facilities are inherently unequal." It was a momentous enough occasion that Edna West Payton, principal of our all-black Francis Junior High School in the West End section of D.C., convened an afternoon assembly of ninth graders in the school auditorium to notify us of the victory over segregation. She tried to alert us, as best she could, to the changes and challenges that awaited us in the upcoming school year, let alone those that would confront us for the rest of our lives. But 67 years later, the mission of integrating U.S. public schools remains unachieved. Racial inequalities have not been erased. Racial and economic divides seem as entrenched as ever. Abject racism and resistance are there, like the air. Witness the renewed assault on voting rights coming from the right. Police violence against black citizens defines our time. Still, Brown led to the Montgomery bus boycott and sit-ins and a civil rights movement that kicked Jim Crow laws in the teeth. The spirit of Brown found life in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which paved the way for the voting rights of 1965 and the 1968 Fair Housing Act, and the election to state legislatures, Congress, and the White House of political leaders who fundamentally changed the color of American public servants. We should never pass up an opportunity to tell this story. Yet today, the Brown decision remains separated from the news, and judging from its treatment, unequal in importance, even for a brief moment, to issues that command America's attention. What does this treatment of Brown tell us about ourselves? And that was by Colbert King. Let's pause to mark Brown versus Board of Education and its lessons for our time. And he wrote it for the Washington Post. And now, also from the Washington Post, this time by Eugene Robinson. Ignoring climate change has not made it go away. We now know the answer to the old riddle. If a tree falls in the forest and nobody is there to hear it, the crash does make a sound. For four long years, the federal government tried to pretend that climate change was either an illusion, a natural process, or a hoax concocted for political reasons. The White House effectively ordered scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency and other departments to cover their ears and hum, na, 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 to cover up the planet's escalating distress. But now, in the reality-based Biden era, our government is once again in the business of honest and honestly reported climate research. The result is new EPA data and analyses showing that the massive impacts of human-induced warming of the atmosphere and the oceans are happening faster and in more extreme ways than when the agency was last permitted to publish climate indicators data in 2016. The United States experienced an average of 6 heat waves, extreme heat events, per year during the decade that began in 2010. The EPA recently reported, using data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That compares with an average of about 4.5 such heat waves per year in the decade that began in 2000, and fewer than 4 each year in the 1990s. Today's heat waves last longer and are more intense than they used to be. For those who suffer from seasonal allergies, like me, it will come as no surprise that pollen season is also lasting longer and getting worse. The ice sheets covering much of Antarctica and Greenland were shrinking only slowly until the 2000s, when rapid melting began, the EPA reported. This melting accelerated sharply in the 2010s. While that might seem a distant phenomenon, it has measurably raised sea levels, which makes our coastal cities increasingly vulnerable to storm surge from hurricanes. The oceans are warmer now than at any time since systematic measurement began, and because warmer ocean occupies more volume than cooler water, this also raises sea levels. Every site measured has experienced an increase in coastal flooding since the 1950s, the EPA says, with the effect being most pronounced on the Atlantic and Gulf coasts. And while it is difficult to attribute any specific weather event to climate change, scientists say that ocean warming has made hurricanes generally bigger and wetter. Last year, there were so many Atlantic tropical storms and hurricanes that meteorologists ran out of names for them and had to resort to the Greek alphabet for the first time since 2005. Perhaps the most important sign that the White House has taken a new approach to these worrisome indicators is that the EPA is able to make this simple declarative statement. Quote, the Earth's climate is changing. Temperatures are rising. Snow and rainfall patterns are shifting. And more extreme climate events, like heavy rainstorms and record high temperatures, are already happening. Many of these observed changes are linked to the rising levels of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in our atmosphere caused by human activities. Unquote. It's those last four words, caused by human activities, that the previous administration tried its best to squelch, pretending there was some sort of debate about what almost all climate scientists regard as a long-settled question. As the EPA climate website notes, for the past 800,000 years, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere oscillated between roughly 180 and 280 parts per million, until the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Over the past 250 years, a blink of an eye in the history of the planet, the carbon dioxide concentration leaped to 411 parts per million in 2019, an incredible increase. Atmospheric carbon traps heat, as do methane and several other industrial gases. We are baking ourselves. Before you can even begin to solve a problem, you have to acknowledge its existence and its cause. The United States government is no longer enforcing a policy of willful ignorance, and that is a beginning. It will not be easy to persuade China, by far the world's biggest carbon dioxide emitter, to cut back its use of coal and other fossil fuels quickly enough. It will not be easy to persuade India to follow a clean energy plan to development rather than use the perhaps quicker and definitely dirtier route taken by rich countries. And it will not be easy to wean the U.S. economy from coal, oil, and natural gas, even though the potential economic benefits of the change are becoming increasingly clear. But under President Biden, we will try, and we will proceed with our eyes and ears open for a change. And that was Eugene Robinson. Ignoring climate change hasn't made it go away. And he wrote this in the Washington Post, of which he has been a major writer for many, many years. And now, two poems by Carolyn Dunn. Play in a War Zone. The four-year-old is part of a game with some older boys who are holding toy guns in a grown-up war zone. Sharp shadows of the big boy arms, hands, and guns fall against the stucco wall, all pointed inexorably at the smaller child. Alone against the wall, his arms and hands splayed over his cotton t-shirt, his brown eyes alert with something nascent. A minute ago, it had been an option, everything just play, and in the glory of being chosen, after all, by older boys. And this one, untitled. A land wind blows warm toward the coast this morning, and I have an unexpected perception as I watch the full alders bend toward the west. I am at the threshold of not needing nostalgia. It's not that the leaves bending toward the ocean don't move me. They always have. But a new feeling is added to longing that I sense will materialize when leaves and wind are gone. I have no compulsion to cry, no need to mourn the world. I know and will know who knows how. Birds gone from my yard. They gave up on the bird bath, stone dry for days. And that was by Carolyn Dunn, who once was a librarian at Clatsop Community College and died of ALS. This is Michael McCusker. Engineer for this program is Dylan Hauser Schalk. I would like to recall a dream. A boy lives in an Eastern Europe village during World War II. One day late in the war, he is out in the fields surrounding the village. He sees a convoy of German trucks enter the village. He hides in the fields, yet he can see the villagers being forced into the trucks. He hears a few gunshots and sees the Germans looting houses. He is afraid. When he sees his family put on a truck, he wants to run to them, but knows it would do no good. The trucks leave. He waits until nightfall to enter the village, but is too afraid to stay and goes back out into the fields. In the morning, ravenously hungry, he returns. He sees the bodies of a couple of dead neighbors the Germans had shot. He spends the day foraging for food from the houses. He spends the next year alone in the village, repairing the damage the Germans had done, preparing the houses for when his family and the others would return. He worked in the fields for his food, seeding and eating. He hid from airplanes that passed overhead, afraid they might be German, but just as likely they might have been Americans, British, or Russian. One day in the spring, soldiers entered the village while he was once more out in the fields. They were not Germans. He hesitantly walked into the village. The soldiers were Americans. He blurted his story, interpreted by a soldier whose family had been immigrants to America. He said there had been warnings and rumors about the German slave labor camps and death camps, but no one in the village had taken them seriously until the Germans came. The Americans offered to take him with them, but he declined. He would wait for his family and the other villagers. They never came back. In the summer, homeless refugees moved into the empty houses, and many were unfriendly to him. Finally, hopeless, he left the village and never returned. I would like to dedicate this to a man from Massachusetts who tracked me down on the internet to tell me a friend I was in Vietnam with was dying. The man who called was a third-generation Polish-American whose grandparents had fled the Nazis. Would you believe that 1,000 immigrants started off for Oregon 2 days from now, 178 years ago, on what might be considered the first national highway, the Oregon Trail? Although that can be readily disputed if anyone remembers the earlier Santa Fe Trail. But that was commercial, not settlement. The last major immigration to Oregon was much more recent and came from the South, displacing many Oregonians whose ancestors displaced the originals who had called the Pacific Northwest home for many millennia. Spring flowering, birds flocking across the sky, finally reaching the final wing of their annual northern exodus. Many more miles yet before they rest beneath the North Star this last month of vernality. All things move all the time. Planets, seasons, months, days, lives. Art and photography attempt a freeze of no time, but time, like moving fingers, cannot be restrained. Plagues also pass. Be patient, stay safe, and help everyone else survive. Soon, we will all literally breathe easier.